everyone. Welcome to episode 47 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. Thanks so much for listening, downloading, sharing, and supporting us, not only here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, but also on iTunes, Stitcher, or Pod Directory. And, of course, over at my website, my123cents.com. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube that we are all a part of as well. So thank you so much for supporting the Jittery Monkey family and the My 1-2-3 Cents family. So we appreciate all the support we get throughout the years here, whether it's through the podcasting that we do, the blogs that we write, or the vlogs that we upload to YouTube. So today's episode is going to be a conversation with an old friend of mine, and I say old, and I use that term loosely because he's about 12 years younger than me, but a buddy of mine, Chris Hagstrom, who I met here in Southern Illinois as he was getting ready to start a wrestling revolution, if you will. And for the world of independent wrestling, it really did make quite an impact here in Southern Illinois, in our region, and even made it somewhat to the national level when we were featured in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. That was, of course, with All-American Pro Wrestling back in 2011, 2012. It was a lot of fun, and we really had a good time doing those shows. And Chris was instrumental in getting episode number 27 guest Mick Foley lined up for us. And he talks about that. And my audio recorder kind of cut off at the very beginning. It actually crashed, and I had to start another recording. And I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the interview, so we kind of pick that up in progress. So when he starts answering the question about Mick Foley, that's who he is talking about. Just kind of put that out there. Also, Hell in a Cell coming up later this week on Sunday. Looking forward to that show. Chad will actually be there. And a note that episode 48 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, will drop later than usual because Chad is going to be at the show, and because of my weird work schedule that we've all talked about before, we plan to do a recap show that will probably drop sometime Monday afternoon, Monday evening. It depends on how the powers that be at the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network are able to get things going. So my buddy Greg Mahochko, working hard on the show that he does called Nerds United. So check out his show as well on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. So without any further ado, let's get to my good friend, Chris Hagstrom.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
The guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
I really think that there was no better person to kind of start this pro wrestler for a day relationship with than Mick Foley, and it was an honor to have him here.
So, you know, and when people go back and listen to episode 27, you can tell that he is a, you know, even the short conversation that we had on the phone, he was a genuine and really a great guy. So I would imagine meeting him in person was probably a bit of a dream come true for you as a longtime wrestling fan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got a chance to talk with him for a while. Unlike most people have to, you know, you get a quick chat with him and then they're done. But being his handler, kind of getting this all brokered, I had a chance to talk to him about a lot of different things and, you know, a lot of stuff off the record that really can't be shared. But it was nice to get that, just to talk wrestling with him and look into his mind. And you talk about some of the boys when they bring in a trainer or someone to teach them to learn some of these behind-the-scenes things you don't get a chance to learn as a fan. And it was a dream come true just kind of sitting there talking with him, just like an everyday conversation, like I've known him for years. So that was, for me, probably the most that I've ever gotten out of a wrestling appearance.
And obviously, we are talking about your work with the South Bend Cubs. And speaking of the Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, another team that you've been a lifelong fan of, doing very well in the postseason for the first time in a long time. So as a lifelong St. Louis fan, I congratulate you. And I have jumped onto the Cubby bandwagon as well. So congrats on a great season.
Well, there's more room for you, Kevin. I'm on board the bandwagon. But you know, I've got a lot of text messages the last few days about the Cubs winning and beating the Cardinals. And I think that's what made it more special, was it was the first time the Cubs and Cardinals had ever faced each other in postseason play. And it was at Wrigley Field when the Cubs won. The first time ever the Cubs clinched, or the Cubs advanced in the playoffs, but won even a playoff series at home. First time ever [S2] Wow. [S1] In the history of Wrigley Field. So that's what made that even more special to that. The energy was just unbelievable. I manage the South Bend Cubs social media accounts, and one of the tweets that I put out there was the atmosphere at Wrigley Field is so electric, the Rock would be envious. So I was hoping to get him to comment, but he didn't. But you know, it was so that the energy was there, and in fact, Kevin, there was one point in time that the whole building was shaking so much, dust was flying out of the ceiling.
Wow!
So I certainly hope that the Wrigley Field will remain standing throughout the rest of the playoffs, depending upon how far they go. But it was very special, and this is a great time to be a part of this organization.
That is awesome. And something else that you know, obviously we're going to talk about your time in the wrestling business. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but talk a little bit as a background. You grew up watching wrestling. WCW was still obviously thriving and around back then. So who were some of your favorites back in those days?
Well, as you kind of alluded to, we've talked about this on From the Raptors Radio in the past, our show in Southern Illinois, but WCW was my promotion. I wasn't the WWF kid. I was the Stings and Dusty Rhodes and woo, Ric Flair. And I think it's kind of funny we bring up Ric Flair, but you and I both did a little Ric Flair tribute in our weddings. That's the one thing that we got to have was the strut down the aisle. So styling and profiling, which was pretty cool.
Awesome.
WCW was my stomping grounds, and I kind of like that good old Southern wrestling style. And obviously, as I grew older, I kind of got latched onto the whole rebellious phase. So then I kind of flipped back and forth during the Monday Night Wars, and you know, watched Stone Cold Steve Austin beating up Vince McMahon. Guys that, you know, when I go back to WCW, I look at the guys, the cruiserweights really stood out to me. And while I hated him as a kid, Chris Jericho, I look back and I see what he's accomplished for. It was absolutely amazing and phenomenal. You know, Ultimo Dragon, the Ultimate Dragon in WCW, Dean Malenko, you know, those guys were unbelievable. I just kind of look up and it's like, wow, I can't believe they can do those kind of moves. And you see that kind of helped pave the way for guys like Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville, which I'm sure we'll talk about in just a little bit. But yeah, WCW and Sting in particular was probably my most favorite wrestler.
So what was it like for you as a fan then to see Sting finally come to WWE? Were you one of those that thought he should have never done it and held out and you know, stayed true to his WCW roots and heritage? Or were you looking at this as an opportunity for him to have that, at least that one go with WWE?
You know, I think that I'm glad that Sting did it. I think that it was important for his legacy to be there. Without being a part of WWE, I don't think he ever would have gotten the legacy, his legacy cemented in the wrestling world. I mean, obviously there's the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Iowa, but obviously it doesn't get as much exposure as the WWE Hall of Fame, and Sting will be in the Hall of Fame. There's no doubt about that. Now that he's been in WWE, they can look back at his entire career and not just the span of his WWE career. I was a little disappointed with the WrestleMania match. I know that Sting can do better than that. We've seen that he's been able to have some pretty unbelievable matches even into his 50s. But I knew there was no way that Sting was going to be the WCW guy that was going to beat a WWE guy in his first match. It just didn't seem like Vince McMahon and Vince kind of held true to that. So Although I am a little concerned if Sting's career is over with his match, obviously, against Seth Rollins at Night of Champions, but he showed that he is a true consummate professional and finished the match despite potentially having, you know, a career-ending injury, especially being in his 50s, but only time will tell, and maybe this is all a swerve. I always like to look at wrestling like maybe we don't always know what's truly going on, and just maybe we'll get that that dream match between Sting and The Undertaker, but obviously Sting's health is the most important this time.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you about that. So, you know, as promised, we're going to talk about some of our good old days, even though they weren't that long ago. But you and I met in, officially met, I guess, face-to-face in 2011. You were going to start up a class project. You were teaching a class at Southern Illinois University here in Southern Illinois, and a production class, and you were going to do a wrestling show, and you asked me to just do color commentary for the one show, and it kind of grew from there. So give our listeners a little bit of history on that.
Yeah, it was going to be a one off show, just a way for the students at the classes I was teaching to take what they've learned to a different environment, and obviously being a wrestling fan and knowing kind of how all that stuff kind of is put together, I would look at other wrestling companies and see how they would produce, you know, whether it was for web stream or whatnot. Like, man, I could do better than this. I mean, there was even a time when I looked at what ROH produced their show. I'm like, man, I could do a better job than this. So we finally had the opportunity to do it for a one-off with the class. We taped at WSIU Studios, which really gave us a throwback to old WCW days, kind of shooting in a small television studio, which I really liked. You know, owner Sean Chambers and I had talked about what can we do, and maybe there's a way that we can market this. And at the time, we kind of looked at WSIL as bringing wrestling back to television. And through negotiations, we got a television show. And I'm not sure if I was prepared for it, to be honest. And I'm not sure if I've ever shared this with you or even on our show, but I don't know if I was necessarily prepared for what was going to come down the pipeline. Having the stars in your eyes, thinking, man, this is unbelievable. I can't believe I can be a part of something like this. But I don't think I was prepared for what was going to happen, both from a physicality standpoint, how much time and effort you have to put into this, and from a financial standpoint, too. I don't think I necessarily saw... I thought I had a plan together, but... you know, it didn't necessarily pan out that way.
Yeah, and you're one of the most organized, and when it comes to the production thing, I mean, you had it down to a science. Talk about the people who may be listening to this that think, oh, I could run a wrestling promotion. I mean, Chad and I had joked about it in the past, but there is so much that goes into not just, you know, finding the location, and, you know, even if you're just doing it to do a show, not even a TV production, but there's so much expense involved in it. I think a lot of people don't realize between paying the wrestlers and you know, setting up the ring and getting a ring if you don't own one. And just talk a little bit about some of the rigors that go along with running or trying to run a professional wrestling business.
Yeah, it's when I look back on it, there were some areas that I could have cut back from a financial standpoint, but to me, I wasn't going to do a half-assed promotion. Pardon the language.
Sure.
But I didn't want to be one of those guys that would rent a small 16x16 ring that barely was a foot off the ground, and throw kids that had no business being in the ring, and just seeing what happens. I wanted to do it right and make it look like it was done right, which is why I purchased my own wrestling ring, you know, an 18x18 actual sized ring that looked like a wrestling ring, and not just you know, four posts on stilts. Maybe we had a set, we had lights. We had guardrails. That's something that you don't see a lot of small indie promotions are guardrails, which, number one, that's a huge safety issue, which I wasn't going to want to be liable for. But it also, it looks like you know what you're doing when the set and everything is visually appealing. So that was a big part of a major upfront chunk of the cost, was to make it look like a wrestling promotion, a wrestling show. And not to mention all the other little incidentals with the audio equipment and getting the video equipment, getting the like a mic flag or the logo on a banner. Those are little things that people don't think about that just help give you the look of legitimacy. And then that's not even going into the talent portion. We talked a lot about this off the record, but there's a lot of headache that's involved in running a wrestling company because everyone is trying to protect themselves, and I get that. The booker is trying to protect the integrity of his vision. The money guy is trying to put on a good show so people are going to come out. The wrestlers are trying to protect themselves from what they would consider a bad loss. So there's a lot of different headaches that go on. Not to mention the fact that when you're trying to organize all this, you have a regular, 9-to-5 job. And you know, the job that I had wasn't even a 9-to-5 job. It was a 60, 70-hour-a-week job in itself.
Yeah.
Trying to find in time to this, working with Black Diamond Harley-Davidson and trying to find sponsors to offset some costs, and then getting all the equipment. It takes a toll on your personal life, and it really took a toll on mine. Almost the point of, ruining it. And there was a time when my partner and I were separated because of it.
Yeah, it was. There were some stressful times for sure. I remember, and I wasn't as entrenched in it as you were, obviously. But you have, you've done the ring announcing gigs. You, I believe you were a referee at one point. You executive producer of All American Pro Wrestling, promoter of All American Pro Wrestling, and even at one point, I think it's safe to say, owner of Pro Wrestling Collision. Of the hats that you've worn, what was your favorite to do?
I would say my favorite was the commentary. And it's not just because you're on this podcast and you're the host of this podcast. But I always, as a kid, I wanted to be a wrestler, but I never thought that I could actually do it. But commentary, because I loved radio broadcasting, I'm like, this is something that I can do. And having a partner like yourself, who's also a fan of wrestling and a fan of good commentary, we worked great as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And those were all the stress that was involved and all that stuff. When I sat on that headset and talked wrestling with you for an hour and a half, 2 hours at a taping time, those are probably when my stress disappeared and I could just get into the show. That was probably my most favorite of all that. Because number one, you're a close friend, but number two, we could just talk wrestling, and that made all the issues just kind of disappear, even if only for 10 minutes, 15 minutes at a time.
Yeah, those were a lot of enjoyable times. I remember them fondly. Some of my favorite memories living here in Southern Illinois have been the ones associated with my time with All American Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling Collision as well. One of the biggest nights for me, and I think for the company in general, was the night of what was called All American Pro Wrestling or AAPW Main Event. And not only did I get to call many of the matches that night, I also stepped into the ring. But what I want to talk to you about is four very special guests we had that night, four big names who have gone on and made a huge mark in the world of professional wrestling. So how did we reach that point where we were able to do this show that was released on DVD and some of these matches, including Pac versus El Generico on YouTube? How did all that come about? How did you get those guys in the first place?
Well, it all started with wanting to do a big show. It's no secret, I think, now that Golden Boy Greg Anthony was helping book AEPW at the time. And, we wanted to do a big show, like an end-of-season show that wrapped up all of the storylines that were going on in season one, neatly. But we needed an attraction because AEPW was slowly getting off the ground, but we needed somebody to help draw, a name to draw the show. So nobody at the time I thought was hotter than Colt Cabana. his name kind of legitimized your show. It provided us an opportunity to get people to come out and see him. So we booked him, and we were going to have him in a match with another star when he came to me and said, "Hey, I've got two guys that are going to be coming in to do a show with Resistance Pro Wrestling, and they're already going to be here. They don't have a booking the next day, you know, for this amount. Do you want to book them?" And to me, I wasn't as big into the international side of wrestling. So I went to Adam, and I talked to Adam, like, "Hey, Adam, what do you think about..." Because Adam's my confidant when it came to matters like this, and I would try to... Since he had his finger on the pulse of independent wrestling, and I asked him, "What do you think?" And he's like, "Are you kidding me?" That wasn't the exact word that he said. It was something a little more vulgar. but he said, "Do it. I mean, if financially you feel you can sell this, do it." And so we did it. And there were some political issues with where their match was going to go and who they were going to face with Pac and El Generico. And ultimately we won out and we got what we wanted. Unfortunately, after we announced the match, then the Resistance Pro decided to not book them. And so they had no airfare. So we had to pay their airfare to get out. And I think I've told the story a couple times. Then Resistance Pro, once they were already booked in and were here, then rebooked them and didn't pay any of the airfare costs. So, Billy Corgan, if you happen to be listening to this, you owe me for the flights of Pac and Generico of January of 2012. but then we also had one more guy that Colt was going to bring down, that was M-Dog 20, Matt Cross, which... was a huge surprise. I mean, that was last second booking and getting them there. So much to the point that M-Dog loved it so much he came back a second time for our Summer Chaos, our second big pay-per-view style show. So all four of those gentlemen really were at the top of their game, and by the time we got to that night, it was unbelievable to see what had transpired with Pac and Generico and Colt Cabana and 3G Eric Wayne, and then Poker Face and M-Dog 20. To have all those guys on one show was unbelievable, to help supplement the great talent that we had. By no means did we bring those guys in just because we didn't think our guys could draw. It was a way to bring in the international community, and that put us on the map. That show is what put AAPW on the map of independent wrestling.
Yeah, it really, and you know, that was kind of the cool part of it all too, was we had so many talented men and women in our locker room, but also you know, bringing in these international guys who up until that point I had heard of El Generico, and I had heard of obviously Colt Cabana and Matt Cross, but Pac I had knew nothing about, and now you know, I'm a huge fan of his. And What do you feel now? I mean, I still am amazed when I look back and think that just a few years ago, you know, we were calling the match for, you know, El Generico and Pac, and now they're on the main stage of WWE. They are, you know, international, even more so now, superstars or wrestlers, and the world knows who they are.
Yeah, that's... I look back on that and I think that you know, an NXT main event and a, you know, at some point in time it will be WWE main event will have been a main event on our show. I kind of look back at that night, and I can, if I close my eyes, I can still see people literally hanging from the rafters because it was such a packed show. It's unbelievable to think about. We did that. And would I have changed any point of that show? Maybe there were a few little things, but when it came to those matches in particular, I wouldn't have changed them for the world. But that night was the culmination of a lot of hard work and was lightning in a bottle, as they say. We captured lightning in a bottle that night. I don't think we replicated that. And maybe I'm being overly critical, but I think that was... That was the highest that we've ever reached when it came to AAPW and eventually Pro Wrestling Collision. We tried to replicate it. We tried to get that level of excitement. I don't think we necessarily did that. I think we had some great moments that maybe might have rivaled any one moment on that show. You know, Mike Masters comes to mind, but I don't think there was an overall show that was any better than that show.
Yeah, and is it safe to assume that that was probably your proudest moment as a promoter and someone involved with the management side of things?
Yeah, that was one of. That moment right there was one of my greatest moments, I think, of my wrestling career as a manager and kind of planner and behind the scenes. The other one I would say was getting in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. You know, I had read it, I was incredibly excited to see my photo. Granted, it was you know for the negative, but I was there, and it legitimized AAPW being a national independent company. And there are some people that might have said, well, we didn't need that. You know, we should just focus on our region. But as a person that kind of looks at this and like, man, I want to be successful. I'd like to get some recognition. You know, to me, that legitimized what we were doing.
It was exciting, and I'm sure you, as you do, still have my copy of that particular issue of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, along with all the ones that I had growing up as well. But that was a really awesome moment to be a part of such a well-respected and well-known wrestling publication.
Oh yeah, and it was for something that hadn't been done up until that point and executed so well. I think afterwards, then I think everybody saw it and then jumped on the bandwagon. After that, it wasn't an original idea, but it was an idea that we executed well and just so happened to be the first ones to do it that year.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And so we talked earlier about your work with Mick Foley and what you're doing up in South Bend. You've had a couple of, or at least one wrestling show there at the stadium as well. Is that right?
That's right. Clash at the Cove, or is now just known as Clash, is run by a gentleman by the name of Crippler Costello. He actually is a former WWE superstar in his own right. He had been featured on Raw and faced the Ultimate Warrior at multiple different shows. He is a former WWE star that runs the event here in South Bend. And it was crazy because it was a one night that I got to kind of go back, and every time, and it never ceases to amaze me, but after every show, there's that moment in the back of my head that says, I want to do this again. And when you're out of it for so long, it's easy to not think about it. But when you get that call of, hey, would you mind doing commentary for this? And that snowballs into, well, you know, how do we do commentary? Well, let me show you. Or when it comes to helping manage the backstage, you kind of start getting that itch again, and you know it happened last year at Clash 16. It happened again this year at Clash 17, you know it just makes you think like, what if I could do this one more time? And by that I mean not up here, but one more time in our region, and what that would mean to the folks that had followed it and to the folks that lived it, because we gave some guys an opportunity that may not have necessarily had the opportunity to shine.
Yeah.
And I really hold that most dear, I think, to all the stuff that we did. Giving guys that deserve an opportunity was probably one of my other proudest moments.
Yeah, and that's the one question I do get asked quite often is, will there ever be another AAPW match? And I think as we've all kind of come to the conclusion is you never say never, because it may very well happen one day.
I was joking with an AAPW star the other day. I won't give out his name, but if people really want to see an AAPW reunion show, get a GoFundMe page started.
There you go.
It's kind of a joke, but in reality, it comes down to, we can make this happen. you know, we can reach out to the guys that have moved on, the, you know, the Matt Cages, the Christian Roses, that are wrestling, you know, all over the Midwest and you know, nationally now. You know, we can reach out to the guys that are a little more local and see what we could do there. It can be done. It needs, there's a financial aspect of it, but there also needs to be that demand. The AEW Facebook page is still in existence. We don't really post anything on there, but we get people every so often ask, you know, when is it going to happen? And Sean Chambers obviously is the man to do that. We all know the, I don't know, do we want to take a few moments and go into that whole situation? But, you know, Sean and I had a disagreement on the AAPW plans, and so that's what kind of led into Pro Wrestling Collision. That was kind of a failed experiment, and so I moved on from wrestling because of it. But I think Sean and I we patched up all the loose ends. You know, we talk every once in a great while, and I know he wants to do it, but it comes down to timing, and can we have that lightning in a bottle one more time?
Well, it would certainly be a lot of fun, and I'm willing to help if and when that opportunity does come. And Chris, as we start to wind things down, you mentioned a couple of alumni from AAPW who have gone on to do great things around the world of professional wrestling. And a couple of names that come to mind, you mentioned Matt Cage and Brandon Espinoza. I know both of them have appeared on Raw in the last year or so as members of the Adam Rose's Rosebuds. But we also saw someone who really got his start in wrestling with AAPW All-American Pro Wrestling, and that was Heath Hatton, who actually was a part of a pay-per-view, Extreme Rules in 2012, in a handicap match with another AAPW guy, Ace Hawkins, against Ryback. So I remember we were heading back from a Chikara show, and he had texted us and said he was getting ready to go out and be on the pay-per-view. And I remember how proud you were as we were headed back home, and we talked about that. So talk a little bit about that sense of pride that you had and why you felt that way.
Well, I think I felt that way because I knew how much time he put in to do this. You know, every wrestler puts in a lot of time and effort to achieve their dream. And because he was local, I got a chance to talk with him a lot and to see him a lot. That's kind of where our bond became very close because, you know, he was, you know, some of the other guys, they had to drive in to Marion, but Heath was local, and so we talk all the time, and, you know, we talk about his workout routines and what he does to get ready. And when you look at his story about a scrawny little, I always joke, a scrawny wannabe thug from North City, Illinois, became what he is right now, is absolutely amazing to me. And to see him go from a kid that was watching an AAPW show in the crowd to having his first match being beaten by Carnage about like 50 times. I think Jay Spade is the only person who holds the record for being beaten by Carnage the most. To see him, you know, win the tag team titles with Curly, and to announce his first championship victory, to seeing him vie for the AAPW championship and then eventually become the first Pro Wrestling Collision champion, to being on Extreme Rules, that made me so proud to see a guy that busts his ass day in and day out, you know, goes to the same personal problems that every wrestling a wrestler or manager does that wants to get into the business. They have to make sacrifices, and to see the sacrifices that he made to get to that point, it really put a lot of pride into me. And of course his daughter, how much he loves her and how much he puts her above all else, you know, that just makes me know, it shows how much of a good person he is and a good man that he is. He wants to do right by her and try to live his dream and provide everything in the world to her. So I think that's what made me the most proud. He was our homegrown guy that got to this point. I know that there's a photo that I have sitting on my mantle of when he won the Pro Wrestling Collision title in the tournament. There's a photo of us hugging in the center of the ring with legit tears in each of our eyes, because that was a moment that I will never forget.
Yeah, Heath is a great guy. I see him quite often actually nowadays, and we talk a lot. So, and I know he's one of those that's on board for a reunion show. So hopefully, maybe one day it will happen. Chris, as we get ready to say goodbye, anything else that you want to add or throw out there about your love and passion for the world of professional wrestling?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to make this just an afterthought, but you and I, I'm from the Raptors Radio, we had a discussion about gays in wrestling and, mm-hmm. and personas and the homosexuality personas. And, you know, I don't think it's – obviously, I don't keep it a secret that I'm gay. But to be in the wrestling business and to never have that be an issue was something that I will never take for granted. You know, in my entire professional career, I've never had anybody take issue with my sexuality, or and I thank the guys in the back for trusting me, for allowing me to help put on an amazing show, and to never have to deal with that as an issue. So thanks to them, and you know, I have something sitting on my mantle as well. It is the No Limits Championship.
Oh yeah! Wow.
I know, we look back and we think, like, I can't believe that we forgot that was even a thing, but that was the, when we talked about moments that I was the most proud, that was that's in my top three as well, of creating the No Limits Championship for guys like Joey O'Reilly and Jay Spade, for Ace Hawkins, those guys that don't get the opportunities like some of the bigger guys would get. And so I hope that in some capacity, no matter what happens, I know some of those guys have gone on to retirement and move on in their careers, but I hope for one night, if we can have a match that would put Jay Spade, Joey O'Reilly, Matt Cage, and Zack Sawyer in a match one last time, I would love to see that. And so I hope that someday we can make that a reality.
I do too, and like I said, keep me in the loop and let me know what's going on. You've been a great friend. You've introduced me to some great people in the world of professional wrestling and let me live out my dreams of doing color commentary and of actually stepping into the ring, and for that I will be forever grateful. Chris, thanks so much for joining us here on My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast.
I appreciate it, Kevin, and I know I left out a lot of people today that I didn't get a chance to thank, but just know that I'm very grateful and thankful to everyone that I've worked with in the past, the present, and thank you, Kevin, for having me on the show today.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.